There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Mark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 861, December 1st. 2020, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Big question from the weekend is, who let the dog out in free practice? The lucky one remains the cat meow in the Middle East, but Monsieur Romain Grosjean was the real lucky dog in Bahrain. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Fittipaldi to replace Grosjean. Yes, LCH has COVID-19. Toto may just run one car. Think about it. Protect Valtteri from the evil competition. They don't need any more points. And we have more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com. And of course, I must remind everybody that servers are expensive and we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab, please. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Thank you. How are things on the left coast?
The left coast is as charming as ever with its wonderful left-leaning liberal ideas.
Very good. Very good. I sure miss those ideas, by the way. Well, Mr. Rogers, what do you have to say about the Turn 3 incident in Bahrain?
Obviously mind-blowing. Pause, reflection. When we get close to death, we humans are a little wussy, and I was a wussy.
Well, I'll tell you, man, as much as I dislike the halo, there is no question in my mind it saved Romain Grosjean's life. No question about it. And as soon as I saw the ball of fire, I knew this could be something very serious. And the first thing going through my mind was the big flaming crash like this at the start of the San Marino Grand Prix many years ago with Gerhard Berger in his Ferrari. And I'm sure you remember that crash, which took place of all the places at Tamburello, and car was a complete ball of fire. And you know, car going through a barrier, you know it's going to be very scary. Our friend Mr. Alan McNish did the same at Suzuka many years ago. I think it was in practice or qualifying while he was driving the Toyota F1 car. This was very, very scary. I am so happy, and so is everybody else, that Mr. Romain Grosjean is alive and well, just a little burned here and there. And Mr. Sebastian Vettel said barrier should not collapse, and fire was another surprise. And I'm sure, you know, FIA is going to do a thorough investigation and come out with more details. So I don't want to sit here and start all kinds of theories. Now, you know, when they showed the onboard camera, I think it was from Kvyat's car, Grosjean's car moved to the right and touched field with the AlphaTauri of the torpedo. And later on, Karun Chanduk showed on Sky Sports, which was pretty obvious, that Grosjean's car going over a piece that came off another car. So I don't know if that created a puncture or what happened, but Grosjean hit the barrier at over 130 miles per hour, and the impact measure a force of 53 G. And according to him, and I'm sure you've read this because he gave an interview with the French network TF1, which is where his lovely wife Miss Marion Joule was a pit lane reporter before they got married. And Romain said that he saw death. And according to him, it took him 3 attempts to get out of the cockpit. And And it's a little emotional interview, how he was thinking about his three sons and family and this and that. But I'm glad it worked out the way it did. And this is what he had to say. I wasn't for the Halo some years ago, but I think it's the greatest thing we brought to Formula One, and without it, I wouldn't be able to speak to you today. End of quote. Do you agree with your fellow Français?
Yes, I mean, there's no doubt, and I'm going to... I criticized the Halo just as much as everybody else did. I hated it. I thought it was hideous. And obviously, not only was I terribly wrong, but I've grown accustomed to it like we always do. We change, and we're so excited about the competition and the fun and the Formula One that the Halo is meaningless in the end, and it saved this man's life. And I wish we had the Halo many years ago. That's the only thing that bums me out. Yes, it just takes one big incident to change the entire world.
Yeah, you know, if you remember what happened to Francois Sivet at Watkins Glen, the barrier collapsed and he died. And the very next year, 74, there was another accident at Watkins Glen. Same scenario, the bottom portion of the barrier collapsed. And I'll never forget this interview with Max Mosley. What happened, that driver was a young Austrian driver by the name of Helmut Koenig, and he crashed and he was decapitated. And some years ago, I was watching an interview on safety in Formula One, and there was a very old interview with Max Mosley. And he said that one of the track marshal walked up to the, marshal post, which was a little bit away from the scene of the accident, carrying Helmut Koenig's helmet with his head still inside. I mean, how gruesome and tragic that is. And then, we had this crash that killed John Surtees' son, Henry Surtees. And then there was another Austrian driver who was actually a protege of Dr. Marco. What was his name? Name escapes me right now, but he was killed in an accident. Same thing, Derek Warwick, Formula 2 car, had an accident, wheel flew off and landed on his helmet and killed him. And then, of course, poor Justin Wilson at Pocono. So I knew with all these accidents happening every now and then that something would be done, and then it was done. It was the Halo, which I hated with a passion. But I just knew, things change and the time comes for it. And Bahrain was, that pretty much ended once and for all any conversation. Even recently, as a few months ago, I remember Nico Hülkenberg saying that how much he dislikes the Halo, and he was not the only one. But this accident and Romain Grosjean being still with us in good shape pretty much has put an end to this debate. Absolutely mind-blowing. But the car catching fire, we're going to find out what happened there. I mean, these cars are, fuel cells are so safe. Something obviously must have gone wrong for it to blow up like that.
They'll get to the bottom of this. We'll have a full report in about a year.
Oh, I just remember that Austrian driver's name who was Dr. Marco's protege, Marcus Huttinger. And he was a pretty talented driver. And remember the famous BMW Pro Car series?
Absolutely.
He raced in that also. And then, it's amazing, the race gets red flagged. And then on the opening lap, after the restart, Lance Stroll was hanging like a Canadian cow. And this is to borrow a phrase from Nico Hülkenberg. And what a day they had, he goes out. And then in the closing stages, Sergio Perez, he was on his way to get his two in a row podium. He conks out, or his car conks out. So big blow for their chances in the championship, so that was pretty sad. Otherwise, did you enjoy the race?
Well, I mean, without all that excitement, I did enjoy a number of things. Carlos Sainz Jr. was great, out of control, loved every minute of it. And LCH, he's really on autopilot. I don't even know if he's thinking about the race. And my favorite is Vettel crying and whimpering about Leclerc. It was great. Leclerc and Vettel was great. Science was all over the place. I mean, he was doing a fantastic job. it was a good race. I mean, the finish doesn't matter. We knew that LCH was going to win the Grand Prix, but once the race started and we knew that Grosjean was okay, that was in the back of my mind for pretty much the entire weekend.
Yeah, but, you know, I saw him, you know, they showed much later the video of him jumping Amco barriers and all that. So I just knew that he's out of danger, which was really their first concern, initial concern. But talking of LCH, win number 11 of the season in 95, you know, this guy is already four wins ahead of Michael Schumacher. So he's off to the races. But, you know, there were two races remaining after Sunday, and there was a chance that, good chance he was going to win both of them and match Schumacher and Vettel's tally in a season of 13 wins. And realistically, how hard can that be given the package and teammate he has? But with that COVID-19 that has come to stop his winning streak, obviously he won't be winning 13 races. Did that surprise you, by the way?
The COVID-19?
Uh-huh.
No. I mean, he's partying all day long with the brothers and the sisters. Dude, they were hugging, they were kissing. COVID-19 was just waiting right there. You could see him like Heckle and Jekyll.
How many brothers and sisters can you find in Bahrain, especially at the track in the COVID-19 situation? But joking aside, apparently somebody in his entourage that came to meet him was also tested positive for COVID-19. So he, you know, it's very sad what has happened. But I'm surprised that, and it's a good surprise that Formula One has gone so far with very few issues. You know, sure, there was the Lance Stroll and Sergio Perez situation, and now Lewis. But with all the people that are involved in Formula One, the traveling, the hotels, this and that, I think we're very fortunate that we were able to get 14, 15 races in.
Absolutely. I mean, amazing. I mean, if you look at some of the American sports franchises, a lot of them are a complete mess. And then if you go to college football, that's a complete mess. Formula One has done an outstanding job.
And you know, Mr. Bottas, he fluffed the start and the restart of the race, then suffering two punctures during the race gave him the perfect racer's excuse why he could not match soon to be Sir Lewis. And you know, Bottas, I feel sorry for him. He is suffering from what I call the Barrichello 19 virus. This problem is not in his head. The real problem and the real virus is in the cockpit of the second car. He is very lucky to have a contract to drive the best car on the grid next year. And I'm sure you'll agree with me, if Ron Dennis or Frank Williams were running this team, they would have brought in the Max Factor a few seasons ago. What say you?
I agree. In the old days, that's what you wanted. You wanted the best in each car. Not this, I love you, Bottas. You're my friend. I love you. I mean, I don't know what's happening, but all we want is, it's the opposite of competition, caution. We want competition, no caution. Balls to the wall. But yeah, listen, it is what it is. Toto is a very safe, logical. You have to think in this way. How would Dr. Spock, no, not Dr. Spock, he's a nice baby doctor, but Mr. Spock run a Formula One team? Very logical. No feelings, no competition. Finishing, points, championship, win, 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 baby.
Now the question is, who will replace Lewis at the Sakhir Grand Prix, which is coming this weekend?
There's no reason to replace him. They've won the championship. They've won the driver's championship. It's strictly R&D. The biggest problem is Toto is stuck because he doesn't want to ruffle the Valtteri Bottas feathers. Do you put in somebody that you know could make things look awkward, shall I say, to be polite?
Well, under normal circumstances, the way Formula One is, you have to enter two cars. They are obligated, contractually obligated to do that. So I think they will enter two cars. It's good for marketing and good for promotion and whatever the agenda is. Then, you know, the choices are pretty simple. They have a reserve driver in the name of Stoffel Vandoorne, okay? This guy's junior career is as impressive as Lewis. He won anything and everything. But then he also suffered from Barrichello 19 virus when he made his Grand Prix debut. Do you remember who his teammate was?
He was this guy that I'm quite fond of.
Yes, he's back next year. And that did it for him. Of course, you know, having a Formula One car with a GP2 engine did not help Stoffel Vandoorne.
You're killing me today, man.
And he is with Mercedes Formula E team. Apparently, they're doing some testing in Valencia as we speak. So he is most likely, and plus he has a super license. And so most likely he will get the seat. And let me just say this, you know, and of course they are saying that there are already reports that Mercedes has approached Williams to release George Russell for this race and maybe the, you know, the remaining two races. It will be very silly of Williams to release him because they need him to not finish dead last. But then, you know, Toto can write him a $5-6 million check without any issue. But one thing I will say, not that I wish this, it's like when Gilles Villeneuve made his Grand Prix debut, you know, coming from Canada, nobody knew him in Formula One. Obviously, I had never heard of his name. And he out-qualified McLaren's number two driver, Jochen Mass. If they bring in Stoffel Vandoorne, or especially George Russell, and this kid out-qualify Valtteri Bottas, that will kill Bottas' career. Right now, he's known as a solid number two. Then he will be, you know, going down from Hertz and Avis, he will move down to like Thrifty Car Rental.
You mean the car rental agency we use?
Yes.
That's what I'm worried about. To protect the psyche of Valtteri Bottas is critical for Toto. He's got another season that he's signed on for. So Toto, I think this decision is huge.
Yes. And you know, which talking about Bottas, it brings us to Max Verstappen, the boy who would be king only if Mr. Wolf gives him the right package. The fact is, and this is a very scary thing, that Max is only a few points behind Bottas in the championship, speaks of his enormous and immense racing talent. Sayonara from Honda after 2021 makes it almost impossible Max will be world champion as long as His Highness is cruising to wins and records, driving a car, according to their advertising geniuses, engineered like no other. And you know, interestingly, Max had company on the podium of his teammate Albon, who in terms of pace was nowhere near Max, but you know, who else could be? First time since 2017 that two drivers from Red Bull were on the podium, which was very, very surprising. But this was only because Checo, also known as Sergio Perez, checked into Heartbreak Hotel with only a few laps remaining. His Mercedes engine was done blowed up, and I think he should have pulled sooner to... That part I did not like. You know, the team should have known this, and maybe they did tell him. He should have pulled over sooner to prevent race ending under the caution. And like I said earlier, this was going to be Sergio's first back-to-back podium finish, but it was not to be. So both Pink Panthers declawed in Bahrain, hurting their chances of finishing third in the Constructors' Championship. Any thoughts on the Pink Mercedes scenario, sir?
Well, once again, I'm intrigued on who will fill that seat. It's fascinating. I even think Lewis might have a say in it. You never know. They could talk to Lewis about this. The other thing is, on the Pink Panthers, that was just, you know, with all Lewis's good luck, then Grosjean took so much good luck from Bahrain that there was just nothing left for anybody.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said. Lewis's luck went to Romain Grosjean's cockpit. You're right. Absolutely right. Moving on, McLaren boys, Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz Jr. completed the top five. And you know what? Having followed both Carlos Sainz's career from his Formula BMW days and also for Lando Norris from his junior days in Formula 4, which was then known as Formula MSA in UK, I was really expecting Lando. I was surprised that Lando did not, given his pedigree, rattle the cage of Sainz Jr. in his first year. Well, that did not happen, so we had to wait for second season. And I'm very surprised that Lando Norris is a competitive driver, very good driver, very fast driver, but he has not really done a Lewis of 2007 or Senna of 1984 against Carlos Sainz Jr. And now he will be partnered, he being Lando, by Daniel Ricciardo. And if you go three seasons in a team and you don't rattle the cage of your teammate once, then there's a question mark. What's going on here? And I don't think Lando Norris will be able to rattle the cage of Daniel Ricciardo, but just a personal opinion. Monza winner Pierre Gasly was sixth. His teammate, the Torpedo, was able to continue after his argy-bargy with Grosjean, but finished just outside the points in 11th. Daniel Ricciardo has two more races with Renault before moving to McLaren, and I see him on the podium this Sunday. You know, he gives his best on race day, but past Sunday he needed a little smedley to pass his teammate Esteban Ocon and finish 7th. Ocon was 9th behind Bottas. Charles Leclerc, numero uno of Maranello, picked up the final championship point after finishing a lap down in his Ferrari. So the Ferrari number one driver is finishing a lap down. Wow. Like Max, he has a long-term contract, which means he is on the waiting list to become world champion. COVID-19 or some other problem like that, totally out of the hands of Lewis Hamilton, they were the only things that were going to stop him. And how sad for Bottas. Can you imagine if Lewis had contracted, with all these back-to-back races, if Lewis had contracted COVID-19 in the beginning of the season, and all of a sudden Nico Rosberg's luck lands in Bottas' lap and he wins the first four races. And that would have made life difficult for Lewis, but Lewis being Lewis, he did claw back a 43-point deficit to Nico Rosberg, who definitely was more of a charger and challenger to Lewis than Bottas. So I'm sure he could have turned the tables on Bottas also. But Bottas has got a real problem, man. He's got a real legend of the sport as a teammate, and there is just no way out for him.
No, he's it's done. He's typecast, they say in Hollywood. It is what it is. Once you're Mr. Ed, you're always Mr. Ed Wilbur.
Yes. And you know, there is a lot of talk about George Russell. He's now in Formula One, 36-0 in qualifying against his teammates. And granted, his teammates have not been Jim Clark and Ronnie Peterson, but they're still racing drivers. So he has an impressive pedigree in terms of qualifying. And again, I've followed his career from his karting days. Not as impressive as Lando Norris's junior career, but he completely blew away Lando Norris when they went to Formula One together a few years back. That really, really surprised me and a lot of people too. And actually, you know, when I did the interview with George Russell at Austin a few years ago, even he said most people were expecting Lando to walk away with the championship. So it will be very fascinating to see if Toto can put him in that Mercedes. Whoever is in that Mercedes, you know, he should qualify in the top three spots on the grid, and most likely on the front row. But man, if somebody can do a performance like somebody did in Spa 1991, I was hoping that they will bring back Nico. This would be Nico Hülkenberg's best chance to be on the podium. Would you like to see him in that silver car, sir?
Yes! Nico Hülkenberg deserves this drive. The best part about Nico Hülkenberg, he's adaptable. He knows the Mercedes motor and his drivability, and he'll definitely out-qualify Bottas. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Bottas is a good qualifier. I might not want to do that, but this is Hulk's last chance. From a German, well, he's Austrian, but come on, Toto. Give your fellow dude, your fellow machismo, throw him a bone. I don't know. That's just me. I don't know. Maybe Jean Todt will make a few phone calls. I'm not sure. But I think Toto should think about Formula One, not just, you know, what's best for them, data collecting, blah, 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 blah. Formula One would like to see Hulkenberg on the podium.
You know what I would like to see, Mr. Rogers?
A picture of me in a mankini.
Which I already had. No. I would like to see Christian Horner say to Toto Wolff, I bet you $50 if you put Max in that car, Max will not be able to beat Bottas. You know, trick him.
But the problem is the whole system, it should work like that. In 1962, it would have worked like that. But unfortunately, I mean, really, the whole world is crying. Just throw Max in there for one race, just so we can have some competition. Man, that would be exciting. That would be a race for the ages.
Then I'm pretty sure if they do that, Max will become the only driver who won on debut with two different teams. I just cannot see Bottas beating this guy in this. I mean, you know, when I watch a race and Lewis is leading and Bottas is third and Max is running in between them, maybe 2 or 3 seconds behind Lewis. The only thing on my mind is, where will this kid be if he was driving the number 77 Mercedes?
I'm telling you, it's something to ponder for sure. And it's sad that the greatest Formula One season we could have would be Lewis and Max, because Lewis is getting older. We're going to lose that opportunity eventually. And that's what's sad. We're going to lose an opportunity because of formalities, people not wanting to be mean and being politically correct and loving, you know, the hugging world. So I don't know what to do. I'm at a loss. But yes, I mean, we all deserve the season of the ages, and that's got to be Max and Lewis on the same team. And it's not going to happen, but boy. Yeah, I mean, Bottas would have no chance against Max.
And now let me ask you a question. You know, we have to accept reality as it is, but your thoughts on Haas F1 signing up Pietro Fittipaldi to replace Grosjean when Stoffel went on, Jean-Éric won, and Nico Hülkenberg are available, they hire this guy. And then they have confirmed Nikita Mazepin from Russia as one of their drivers for next season. Your thoughts on those issues, sir?
It's all about the dollar. I understand. I mean, getting a Fittipaldi on your team is sort of a cool thing. And they've had this guy hanging around for so long, they felt obligated, for sure. And, you know, the other driver is for the dollars, and he admits it. I mean, Gunther Steiner is going to go out there and justify everything they're doing. And you know what? Go for it. They're a low-budget team. They need money. And damn it, they need to get back into midfield. And whatever it takes, if you got a couple of hungry dudes, you know, if there's less crashing, you know, hey, I like Grosjean, but in the end, I'm sort of glad that he's leaving Haas. I want Haas to do well because American teams are few and far between. But let's give these guys a chance. And listen, the dollar goes a long way.
Yeah, it's hard to turn down business proposal from a billionaire. But I have to say this team is now the new Williams of Formula One. And the only thing they are missing right now, which they and the person is available, they should immediately hire Claire Williams as their dynamic spokesperson, who can tell us how talented Pietro Fittipaldi is and how wonderful Nikita Mazepin is. Very, very sad that Formula One, the pinnacle of motor racing, has come to this stage. But this is the reality, and I accept it.
Good job, Nass. On that note, I'm going to talk to Gary Sloan right now.
Hello, listeners. My name is Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So in Bahrain, the Formula One community witnessed the horrific crash of Roman Grosjean. And at the same time, it can only be described as some sort of miracle as Grosjean appeared from the flames, phoenix-like, into the brave hands of Dr. Ian Roberts. Grosjean, no stranger to a crash or two, prophetically commented in a recent interview, I hit the wall at over 200 miles an hour and I'm still here. Well, many questions need to be answered over the coming weeks and lessons will need to be learned, as F1 can never be complacent when it comes to safety. There have been a series of safety-related issues in recent race weekends, with incidents involving the safety car, marshals on the track, and in a chilling reminder of Jules Bianchi's fatal accident back in 2014, there was a recovery truck in use when qualifying had restarted in Turkey. So worrying times for F1. F1 has come a long way in safety terms from the days when deaths were deemed to be an acceptable part of racing, with the sport viewed as some sort of gladiator spectacle. The statistics were brutal. For example, between 1957 and 1961, 20 drivers were killed. Grosjean's accident was a reminder of drivers who often died in a horrific fireball, with trackside marshals wearing civilian clothing, tackling the inferno with nothing more than bog-standard fire extinguishers. Sir Jackie Stewart was a vocal and active safety campaigner over many years, alongside the late Professor Sid Watkins and Charlie Whiting, but it was an uphill battle. All this was to change due in no small part to two men, Max Mosley, FIA president, Bernie Eccleston, the commercial rights holder. The ill-fated weekend of the San Marino Grand Prix in 1994, which saw the tragic deaths of Roland Ratzenberg and Ayrton Senna, was a game-changer. The sport was plunged into crisis with attacks from all sides. Governments around the world pondered banning the sport, and manufacturers questioned their involvement with F1. TV companies started to make threats about withdrawing coverage and cancelling contracts, but the greatest risk was sponsors exiting the sport after being nervous about the link between their products and the loss of life. Something had to be done, so Mosley launched a zero mortality goal and announced the formation of the Advisory Expert Group, chaired by Professor Sid Watkins, to research and improve safety in motor racing. Advances in safety being ongoing ever since, with the introduction of safer cars due to the carbon fibre survival cells, wheel tethers, the hands device, visor panels, and halo to mention a few. Procedures and facilities at race weekend were developed, with highly trained medical extraction teams positioned trackside and state-of-the-art medical facilities built. Safety, and in particular research, were always hampered because it was expensive. So how was all this progress paid for? The funding came through a deal signed back in 2001. After a clever bit of negotiation between Eccleston and Maxley, the FIA sold a 100-year licence to the then-owner CVC Capital Partners for an initial payment of $313 million and an annual dividend. Mosley stated at the time, "Over the totality of the contract and on an annual basis, the sum we have accepted represents billions of dollars. Looked at from the point of view, it's a huge amount of money." So the FIA Foundation was established with one of its aims to further road safety, including motorsports. And it's been a successful transformation, with only one fatality in Formula One, with the death of Jules Bianchi in 2014 from injuries suffered during the Japanese Grand Prix. Long may it continue. On a footnote, a feature of race weekends is the deployment of the safety car when the all-powerful Mercedes AMG GTR springs into action. Now, the commercial arrangements for the safety car are confidential, but it cannot be underestimated the value to Mercedes. Mercedes has supplied the safety medical car since 1996. The TV coverage to millions of fans globally when the safety car is on track provides Mercedes with a rolling advert placed to a key Mercedes marketing strategy, safety. Subliminal message to car owners is when there's an accident, you can rely upon the safety of a Mercedes car. So in a demonstration of their commitment to the Aston Martin project, unconfirmed reports state Mercedes have allowed Aston Martin to do a deal with F1 to provide the safety and medical cars at more than half of the Formula One races next season. Underlying the marketing significance of the safety car, Aston Martin will provide the cars in countries where it has a larger market share, with Mercedes retaining the rights in countries such as the US and China. The first use of the safety car in F1 was at the 1973 Canadian Grand Prix. It was to be an eventful introduction, as the safety car took its place in front of the wrong driver, resulting in some cars deemed to be incorrectly one lap down. Chaos took several hours to resolve before the actual winner could be announced. No surprise then, it was a further 20 years before the safety car was ever used again. The car in question, a yellow Porsche 914. Well, that's it for another week. More details at inthepitlane.com. Until next week, stay safe, stay well.
Gary, thanks again. Another outstanding performance. And you know what? I think you need a drink of water, Nasser. So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm David Coulthard, otherwise known as DC, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir, and we shall start with the penultimate round of Formula 2. Feature race on Saturday was won by Felipe Drugovich, third win of the season for the Brazilian driver. Second was Man Who Started from Pole, Callum Eilert from UK. Mick Schumacher put in a tremendous effort. This was very impressive. Qualified 10th and was up to 3rd on the second lap. Led the race and then in the closing stages tried very hard to grab 3rd place on the podium, but was unsuccessful, giving Indian driver from Mumbai, Jahan Daruvala, his first podium of the season. Sunday sprint race, win number 4 for Russian racer Robert Schwartzman. He is pretty good and he was a rookie, and earlier in the season he looked like he was going to win this championship. Fellow comrade and Gunther Steiner's new BFF, Nikita Mazepin, was second with Louis Delatraz 3rd. And Louis is the son of ex-F1 legend Jean-Denis Delatraz. Mick Schumacher was 7th and looking good to take the championship in the final round next weekend, which is also in Bahrain at the Outer Circuit. Sir, shall we do some business news for Red Bull?
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Dietrich Mateschitz has become a multi-billionaire courtesy of his Thai partner, from who he got the rights to market the drink. Translation in English of that drink is Red Bull. And the other person who owns 51% of the family is of his Thai partner, Chaleo Yuvidia. I believe he passed away a few years ago. And check this out, man. Red Bull sold in last year 7.5 billion cans worldwide. Isn't that impressive?
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And I read somewhere that, you know, the drink sells for like $2 or something, and its cost is like 35, 40 cents per can. So this is a serious cash cow. And no wonder the name Red Bull, that Mr. Mateschitz has. And the guy used to be a tooth salesman in South Asia. So he has done very well for himself. And according to Ralph Schumacher, and you know, Ralph lives in Austria, so he may have a inside line into Red Bull, that all top decisions about drivers are made by only one person, and that is Dietrich Mateschitz. So let's see what they will do about Alexander Albon. This guy must be like, I don't know if I will have a ride tomorrow. Maybe they'll keep him, maybe they won't, I don't know. But looks like it won't be Sergio Perez. Apparently he had a press conference on Monday. I've not read the details on that. But he's quoted as saying that he's ready for a sabbatical in 2021 and he already has good offers on the table for 2022. So looks like he will not be driving for Red Bull. And then according to Nico Hülkenberg, things have gone quiet. Maybe if we put two and two together, that means Alexander Albon will stay at Red Bull next season. But, you know, in F1, you never know.
Yeah, you never know in F1. And the big surprise would be Hülkenberg and Perez go to Red Bull. Max goes to Mercedes. Valtteri Bottas goes home.
Yeah, times are interesting. And I just hope, you know, we have two more races remaining in Formula One. I would hate to see something bad happen, whether it's COVID-related or accident-related. Or it's been a difficult season, and I would like this thing to end on a reasonable note, if not a happy note. I mean, this was a serious wake-up call, this crash and all that flame that we saw. So let's just wrap it up neat and clean. Por favor.
Good point, Nass. Let's get everybody safely home, in other words.
Oh, you know, in other big news, I mean, this last few days have been major news. Audi has announced that they are getting out of Formula E and coming back to Le Mans, and they will tackle Dakar Rally also. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, with Peugeot back at Le Mans, Audi back at Le Mans, you know what that equals?
No wins for Nando.
No, it equals competition.
Yes.
Fernando will get plenty of wins next year. Don't worry, because I have a feeling that Lewis might get COVID a couple more times. Boom, boom, boom. We call it the Mark Marquez syndrome.
Yeah, man. You know, I mean, Bottas must be thinking, you know, who will they bring in and what if I am number two to a temp agent, temp worker? That'll be very, very bad. And I hope it doesn't work out that way.
Don't worry. It's all good. It will be fine. Everybody's going to be happy. We're going to end the world. I mean, not the world. Don't want to do that. We're going to end the season with everybody holding hands, kumbaya, and Valtteri will not be vexed by a better driver. You'll see. Toto's going to take care of that. So anyway, keep up the good work, everyone. Nas, an outstanding job with the MM. Once again, Gary, love it. Keep it up. And wow, we got a race next weekend. So you know what that means? I got to get some rest. I will see everybody at the hot dog stand.
Will it be a hot dog stand or the hot falafel stand in Abu Dhabi?
In Abu Dhabi, definitely the hot falafel stand, or the stand right next to it is tofu dog.
Mmm, interesting. Well, folks, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Stay safe, everybody, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Nasser.
Bye-bye.